As an employee-owned financial firm, Baird offers advice solely focused on clients' needs, while consistently investing in their expertise and capabilities to serve those in need. More information at baird-difference.com.
Now, every Tuesday, we head to the mayor's office in downtown Bloomington City Hall, and our great friend is Mayor John Hamilton. How are you this afternoon, my friend?
I'm very good. Thanks so much. Nice to be with you.
It was nice on Saturday as the town absolutely, well, it was nice on Friday as well. The town fills up for graduation. That was, I talked about that Friday afternoon and Monday a little bit, Mayor Hamilton. It was nice to even just from up here in One City Center or walking the streets, to have the vibe of Bloomington back that we haven't had in so long. We thank our friends at Indiana University for hosting a great graduation. We didn't have the best weather on Saturday night or for Mother's Day on Sunday, but when we were out and about Friday for lunchtime and then Saturday mid-afternoon, there was plenty happening here, and that just felt great to see again.
It did. You know, there were a lot of smiling faces over the weekend. This has been, of course, a challenging year for students and faculty and families, and it was nice to see the families together and the students celebrating and maybe getting a little feel of the normal rhythm again. So that it was you know, one of our big weekends for the city.
Yes, absolutely, and we hadn't obviously had one since 2019, so a little bit different feel with everything. But as we move on, and well, it's the second day of summer since the students are gone. Well, at least our first chapter in summer. The forecast doesn't seem like it, but the town can exhale a little bit. We know the student population thins greatly, but that doesn't mean that we're completely out of the woods yet. And you guys had a meeting late last week. I know the graduation and everything else was going on. You've decided, your group here in Monroe County has decided what moving forward?
Well, yeah, you know, on the COVID front, on the pandemic front, it's still really it's anxiously watch and try to monitor where we are. We see some good signals and we see some bad signals. You know, hospitalizations have gone up actually quite a bit in the state. The daily case average has been bouncing around. It went up quite a bit in the last few weeks and it's come down a little bit. It's just really, it's really difficult to know where we are. Again, you know, the vaccinations are so important. And one thing that has struck me, I don't know, we were at the peak, we were giving over 50,000 vaccinations a day in Indiana. We're now, latest I've seen, is kind of mid-30,000s a day. So while we're not anywhere where we need to be in terms of the total number, we've really slowed down how many daily shots are being given. So it's just concerning. It's we got to keep watching. So we're kind of holding fast where we are right now. I will say, you know, I'm in my office, and when I'm meeting with all vaccinated people, we can take our masks off and we can kind of act normal and, you know, kind of have a meeting like we used to in conversations. But it's still, we can't do that overall because we don't have enough vaccinated folks.
Now, when we move forward, and I saw the article that said Monroe County COVID-19 health restrictions will remain in place, even though state legislatures on Monday overrode the governor's veto of a bill giving elected officials power over such public health orders. That's from the Herald Times. I saw online from Boris Ladwig. Basically, you do play a lawyer on TV and one on the radio as well, so you can help me here. The state legislature has said what in regards to who's in charge moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate. I think the governor did the right thing vetoing the bill. Basically, you know, we have a public health system which is staffed with professionals and overseen by boards and public boards that are there. They do their jobs in order to protect the public health, and they have done a good job overall, I think, in this pandemic here and around the country. This bill basically says, it restricts what public health people can do and requires that essentially the county commissioners, a legislative body, and or a city council if you have a health department. We do not in Bloomington, but it basically means the health department's orders are not effective unless and until a legislative entity affirms them. Now, you know, that's problematic because of timing in some ways, because you may need an order right away, and it takes time to get legislative action. And I personally think it's problematic, too, that it makes political what should really be a science and health-based decision. Now, let's be clear, legislatures could always step in and take action if they want to. They have a lot of ultimate power, but this kind of takes away the authority that's typically been vested in our health departments. Now, locally, I want to congratulate, I think our county commissioners have been terrific and will support everything that the health department does. That's not always true in some places, and you know, our city orders are not based on a health department, but kind of basic municipal authority. So I wish they wouldn't have overridden it, but I don't think it will make a big difference locally. Let me just end with that.
Well, the tough part is we're a tourist destination. We're a worldwide university. We are, I'd say a destination point in South Central Indiana. And if it's not that our rules are better or worse than anybody else's, but if everybody's playing by different rules, how do we keep it straight on which rules to follow?
Yeah, you know, I was talking to somebody outside our area today who was asking about, you know, what's it like with the city, with the university. That's an unusual thing to have 40,000 plus students who come and go and come from all over the country and the world. So making sure we do the right thing to protect everybody is really important. So I regret that happened. Again, I think we have really strong collaboration and agreement so far on how to approach things generally. So I don't think it will make a huge difference in Monroe County. But you can imagine there are some places where the politics might get right in the middle of the health and the science, and that's unfortunate if that were to happen. And there's a little more risk of that now than there was a week ago.
Now, where does Monroe County stand at the last numbers you saw last week in the number of people vaccinated? Are we keeping pace? Are we setting the pace? Are we lagging behind? And how do you see those numbers now that the students are gone? Will you figure up that should open up? Well, I don't know what it does.
Yeah, you know, it's really complicated because, as you might, the data that we have is really coming from the state and that state database. And so if we have students here who have a home address of, you know, Marshall County or Marion County or Vigo County, they won't show up as vaccinated here. It'll show up in the state database that they're vaccinated in their home address county. So it's really hard for us to know of our population of 85,000 in the city or 150,000 or so in the county, how many have been vaccinated here? So we don't know everybody who's been vaccinated here. It's the state database says 55,000 people have been vaccinated in our county, but it's not clear if that's gotten everybody or if that's counting some students, for example, who were here who are no longer here. So it's pretty hard to tell.
What about the Pfizer 12 to 15 year old angle?
Uh-huh.
Is that going? Obviously, that helps, but.
Well, that's a good thing. I'll say something that's kind of hit me over the last week or two. Again, I'm not an epidemiologist, but even if we don't make herd immunity, population immunity in the state or in the country, if we can get close to that locally, that makes a really big difference, because it does mean, even though we have people coming in and out, if you think about the virus really getting a foothold and blooming here and getting a growth here, if we have local high numbers of vaccinations, it just makes it hard for that virus to expand quickly. So even if we can get more 12 and 15-year-olds, and if we can get more IU students and Ivy Tech students and high school students and seniors and employees like we're trying in the city, that all can help if there is an outbreak, that it will diminish the chances that outbreak will get bad.
Well, that's the good news. And now, look, I've got my shot. I know you have your shot, but you pay attention with your health group every week. Are we still having to do appointments, or are we till the point yet of where we can just walk in and get it? I don't know what the deterrent is. I mean, maybe people don't believe in it. Maybe they're anti-needle. I mean, I get all that stuff. But do you think this will be the optimum when we can just walk down the street like we can to go buy some aspirin at the drugstore? We can walk in and get a shot?
I do think that helps. And I know there's a lot of walk-ins now available. You're still suggested to go to Our Shot, the website, ourshot.in.gov, I think, where you can. But they will list walk-in clinics. I do think that's helpful for people. Just the easier it is. I know I heard from somebody who went to Simon Scott Assembly Hall and said, my gosh, it's a lot easier to get in and out of there now than it was a month ago, you know. So that's kind of bad news, but it's good news for anybody trying to get a vaccination. If you have a problem on the web and you can't get through, just call 211 and people can help you identify. And I do think it will help to have walk-in shots.
It has to, just to eliminating the barriers, eliminating the hurdles. We know the vaccine is free. Did I see today President Biden was, I have the article right here in front of me, announces Uber and Lyft rides amid 4th of July vaccination push. So
nice.
If you need a ride, well, we're, again, trying to eliminate these barriers to go, but there's nothing that will guarantee herd immunity besides people getting shots in their arms. So that will be the next angle to get to.
And I know there will be rides being offered if people have problems from IU Health and I think Indiana University and others. So, again, that 211 call or online can help you identify. If you have anything in the way of you getting a shot, please let us know. Let people know so we can help make it easy for you.
Trying to get 70% of adult Americans vaccinated by Independence Day. That's an ambitious goal, so let's do it. Why not? Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. He checks in every Tuesday from City Hall, and we try to keep our list is long. Every week we get together and try to get through it all. Kirkwood Avenue, boy, it was busy this weekend. We hope that's going to stay throughout the summer. We're not going to change anything down there, are we?
So that's set officially through June 30, but I think you could probably expect to see a request to extend that farther. That'll be in front of the City Council, I think. I think it's a wonderful way to keep everybody as safe as we can. I just saw a note from one of the restaurants down there that said, oh my gosh, this has just been a lifesaver for us. We really appreciate it. And urging to keep it going. So if people feel about it, let us know. Let your city council member know. Let my office know if you like it or don't like it. But overall, I think the verdict has been that's been a very positive step for the community.
Now, you had I don't want to say a pile of money. That sounds crass, but it's only $21 million or so. You talked about a couple shows ago how you've got three buckets that you want to kind of look at that. You've got annexation on the agenda. You've got plexes and P. Oh, geez, here we go with the UDs again, the UDOs and PUDs. We got all this on the table right now. We got a lot of things happening. How does the city council keep swimming?
Well, they're busy for sure. That's what happens in a city where a lot of things are going on and we're evolving and trying to manage, and we're in the middle of a pandemic, and so we got to keep managing. They're doing their good work still remotely, of course, and that actually we found it helps people attend meetings. But right, the Unified Development Ordinance, the zoning code went through a couple. I think they had three full sessions last week, actually, and did some amendments, and they've been tweaking the zoning a little bit on the plexes and actually moving a little bit back toward what my administration proposed. But we'll see. There's still a night or two left of that, at least. Hopefully that'll get finished this week. Annexation, we talked about the resumption of that. We did move that back a week or two, maybe a little more, just to create some room in the schedule. But that's a multi-month process. It'll go into September or October probably for the final decisions on that. So there's many months, and we'll be sharing more information about that. This week we should be releasing a fiscal plan, which is a big update, and that has a lot of information that'll be interesting to people about annexation. We even had a Waldron report last week that came out talking about that. So there are a lot of things going on.
Absolutely. And the question I've been asked by folks is, why annexation now when you have this Plex issue that is obviously firing up people all over the city? Why couldn't that wait down the road? I don't know what wait means. I don't know what wait helps. But it just seems like the plate is it too full for the council to handle all this right now, where we're just hurrying to get things done instead of taking our time to get things done?
Well, no. I mean, there are a lot of issues going on, but we're a big city, a complicated city, a lot of different opportunities and issues in front of us. The council has a very deliberate process for scheduling, and we work with them every week to identify, you know, what are the issues that need to be done, what are the issues that could be done, and try to actually set it through the whole year. We know we have August and September will be busy with the budget, but these are all issues that waiting doesn't really change the issue. An annexation, was delayed for 4 years because of a state action that shouldn't have been done, so we're really kind of making up for lost time with that. But the council sets their schedule with us and is very deliberate and thoughtful about it, and I think they can manage. And if they don't, then stuff gets pushed down the road a little bit, but we'll see what happens.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest. He joins us every Tuesday, and we talk about all the business, and there's lots of it happening here in the city of Bloomington. I didn't want to gloss over the Waldron report. Tell me what you learned when that came out late last week.
Well, yeah, let me give a big thank you to the, I think, almost 20 residents, individuals who volunteered their time. I asked, and we formed this task force to really look at the Waldron, the old City Hall, and most recently the John Waldron Arts Center, and to try to take a look. That came back to the city, as people may recall, from Ivy Tech. It had gone through two different iterations, once with the Bloomington Arts Council for 20 years and then with Ivy Tech for 10 years, and they both kind of gave the building back and said, well, we did our best and it was a nice run, but we'd like the city to take it back. So when it came back, I asked this group of a mixed group of residents to say, well, what do you think we should do with the Waldron? And they worked really hard for several months and came out with their report last week and made several recommendations. And I think, I'll give kind of a more formal response in the days, weeks ahead. But overall, I think a really good thoughtful review basically said, you know, this has been really important to the arts community, performing arts, and we need to make sure we leverage the Waldron, that building, the most, as much as we can for the performing and visual arts. And they recommended a kind of a 5-year time frame for the current uses, if you will, to kind of make sure at least whatever we do, there's a transition. They recommended actually the creation of a kind of a quasi-governmental entity to own it, and maybe the Buskirk too, and take it. The city's not necessarily great at property management. It's not what we typically do. That was,
right.
So that was another recommendation. And then the final recommendation was to convene and commission a third-party study, and this is kind of interesting, to really look about a future purpose-built performing arts center for the city, to study what that would look like if we really looked at, if we were designing from the ground up, what would a performing arts facility look like, where could it be, and they recommended hiring a professional to come in and help us study that. So those are kind of their recommendations, and we're studying them, and I'll be talking about them in the weeks ahead, but it was a really great effort by a group of residents who dug in and tried to think about the future of that building.
And the building has been around for quite, it's not going anywhere, that's for sure. That limestone's not, that's not gonna go anywhere. So it'll be interesting to see how this all works itself out. And again, I know your passion for the arts is clear, And our community's passion for the arts, I believe, is also a clear vision
Indeed.
On that. So that will be an interesting. Well, that's if you're going to be a cultural hub, you have to have culture. And I think Bloomington is doing that, and with Indiana University and with the city as well. So, we'll look forward to seeing how that works out. Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon before we chase him off into the afternoon. I had a little MG3. My son has baseball over at Bryan Park. There's some interesting hydration stuff going on there in the large empty. Well, it was empty. Now there's water in the large pool area. Is that a foreshadowing hint? We hope for, well, I guess ice skating tonight, but warmer weather. We hope to. Is that something we can read into?
Well, we can't slip anything by you, Mike. That is not just rainwater in there, but we haven't. We haven't made any official announcements, but we sure hope that we'll be able to figure out how to make that available to folks. We are taking steps that we need to take to check out the physical facilities and to check out our lifeguard training and make sure that's all in shape. But we're still talking to the county health department and looking at the protocols for that. But won't it be nice if we can have some days at the pool again?
First thing you need to check out is the heater to make sure.
That's on the checklist.
Oh,
let me assure you.
It's going to be 37 degrees tonight. My goodness, we frost advisory on the water. So that's something. Again, it's nice to have some hope when we look forward. And because summertime, again, kids are going to be different than it was last summer. We're going to be able to be outside and be able to use playgrounds and things like that. I know some summer camps aren't all hands-on now. Some are virtual or whatever, but we know we're not going to be quote-unquote trapped inside, so that's exciting. Now, a park that's near and dear to you is been under a little bit of a trial run, the Lower Cascades Park that has been closed to vehicle traffic and only pedestrian traffic only. I've heard some folks, a little blowback there says we're not sure how that's going to work because we haven't tested it out during a home football game. We haven't tested it out during graduation weekends or things like that. What is your measurement that's going on down there to see if this will or will not work and if it will open back up to vehicle traffic?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, that's our oldest city park, Cascades Park. Part of the bicentennial bond, the bicentennial gift to the future back in 2018 was investing in some enhancements of several trails along with a bunch of trees and some other things, downtown alleys that we're doing. But one of those trails is the Cascades Park and the road. The road itself is in pretty bad shape. There's a lot of need for investment in that road if it's going to continue to carry motor vehicles. So one of the things we looked at was close half of it and use the other half for a trail. That proved to be difficult, so we tried, let's see what happens if we just make the whole thing bikes and pedestrians only. So we've been trying that and getting different feedback. I know there are some different views about it. I think we have a bunch of people to still listen to and process to go through, so there's nothing imminent yet on it. I will say this, you would never build a park today with a road down the middle of it carrying vehicular traffic through the middle of a park that's like that, and I would also say it's just a spectacularly beautiful area. So it's no secret that I'm interested in this 100-year-old park or almost 100-year-old park to think about for the next 100 years, how do we really make it the natural beauty that it is. But there are factors to look at, access for people with disabilities, if they're very busy weekends that happen, how do we deal with that? But there's a lot of public discussion going on, and I encourage people to get down and check it out, see what you think. See what you think of it.
And then obviously we know we closed the city survey that we had told you about for the last few months. But you comments are always welcome, correct? You can go to the city's website.
Absolutely. Come in. There's the parks has an actual specific form for the Cascades if you want to comment on that. But you also can continue to give comments on the survey online or through our office. However, we welcome views about that.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate your insight every Tuesday when you join us just after 4:05. Mr. Mayor, enjoy the rest of the sunshine today. You won't need your umbrella the rest of the week. That's the good news. But you might need your electric blanket tonight and tomorrow night. So stay warm, and we'll get caught up with you next week.
Thanks a lot. Have a good week.